Okay, great. Good morning, everyone. This is Brian Clark, CEO of Greater Philadelphia Health Action. The purpose of this call is to do two things. Give you an update on COVID-19 and its impacts on us at multiple levels as an organization, and also to review the audited financials for 2019 and answer any questions related to those as well. I'll start off with COVID. It's been, seems like forever, but it was about mid-March where the state of PA started their shelter-in-place shutdown initiatives. And during that time frame, you know, our visits, we were seeing about 1,200 folks a day, give or take, and that number was cut in half literally overnight, mid-March, because, again, the whole public was told, don't go to the doctor. If you're not, you're sick and you don't have these symptoms, don't go to the doctor. So healthy people effectively stayed in, heeded the governor's orders, and stayed safe. But as a consequence, our business was significantly impacted, and I suspect our patients' health will be significantly impacted to the extent that those patients don't get back in on their regularly scheduled visits and get their maintenance and medication that they need to be healthy. So that was mid-March. And right around the mid-April is where, maybe first week of April, is where we started to furlough patients. So we recognized that, furlough staff, excuse me. So we recognized that our visits were down. We have three different business lines, medical, dental, behavioral, and pharmacy, a fourth, which really is impacted by all those lines of business. The dental business was effectively shut down entirely because of the aerosols that are generated with most dental procedures. In the state of PA, you could not do any elective dental procedures. So cleanings and scalings and extractions, if it was not an emergency, it couldn't be performed for health reasons. And so our dental business was basically cut down by about 85%. On the medical side, the physical health side, and the mental health side, or behavioral health, those visits went down in large part because patients stopped coming in. They could have come in, but again, folks were following the orders. And we saw this drop in visits, and we furloughed about 130 employees across the entire company in an effort to right-size our staffing, reduce our cost to meet the demand that we had. That was about mid-April. During that time frame, we converted to telehealth. So as a way to get more visits and to be able to serve our patients, Greater Philadelphia Health Action, along with other federally qualified health centers, lobbied, if you will, educated the state of Pennsylvania Health Department around the issue of telehealth and to give us permission to do telehealth visits for Medicaid patients without a video, because a lot of health centers don't have the capacity to handle video. And a lot of our patients don't have smartphones to even do a telehealth visit. So we were able to do a telephonic visit with just the telephone. And once we started doing that, our visits went up. And we're now, if we were 50% back on, the first 2 weeks, last 2 weeks of March, we're now at about 90%, 87% last I looked in visits. So the visits have come up pretty steadily, going all the way back to March. Telehealth has bridged the gap significantly for us. We're doing probably in the neighborhood of about 75 to 80% of our visits through telehealth on the medical and behavioral health side of the business. Once the state entered the green zone, meaning we kept infections down under, I believe it's double digits, the city of PA, the city of Philadelphia, rather, entered into the green zone, and dental has since been open, and that business is, you know, coming back and building back rather nicely, and pretty confident that in all the divisions, quite frankly, we will be back to our pre-COVID levels shortly. In fact, I believe last week we were actually at 100%. I'm going off of 3 weeks ago's data, but last week we were actually at 100% across the board, meaning we were generating as many visits as we did prior to COVID. And again, telehealth is playing a big role in that effort. It's really, really been helpful. And so the business has come back. Our patients are unfortunately not any healthier than what they were prior to COVID, where we do a decent amount of COVID visits, but not as many as you would think. COVID isn't really a disease that is visit rich. Once you know that you have it, you stay quarantined, you monitor your breathing and your fever, you're having a temperature, and if it escalates from there, our patients are going to the hospital. They're not coming back to us. So as challenging as COVID is, and as much as you see it in the news, for an ambulatory business like ours, it really doesn't generate a lot of visits for us. And in fact, it prevents us from having visits because our patients are still fearful about coming in. We've had, of the 600 employees that we've had about 5 employees that have tested positive for COVID. We're not convinced that they got the virus within our buildings, but fortunately, and that was around March and April, since late April, none of our employees have tested positive. All of our staff, no matter what their role is, wear a face mask and a full face shield. As long as they're in the building, they wear a face mask and a full face shield, and we're pretty confident that will prevent them from contracting the virus. We have all of our sites are doing testing, and we have 2 locations where we do testing outside, and you can drive up or walk up to do testing. And so it is of great benefit to the community. It allows for folks to stay in their cars and stay safe. It allows for us to keep patients from coming into the building and be outside in open air. You should see the team of people that administer the test. They look like they're almost astronauts or you know, working in one of these labs somewhere where they're, you know, they have the booties on, you know, gowns, their gear, mask, face shield, a hood. I mean, they're pretty sealed up, and that's going rather nice for us. As of 2 weeks ago, the infection rate of the folks that are coming in is about 12%. So about 12% of the folks that are coming in for tests are testing positive. And it just gives you just a sense for, you know, what's happening with our patients and what's happening in the communities. We've done a lot of work around getting the word out about our telehealth services. You know, if you're a patient of ours and say you've been with us for 3-4 years, you wouldn't know that we offer telehealth. Your premise is, oh, am I going to the health center because of COVID? I'm just trying to stay safe. And so we've done radio ads, we've done some radio interviews, we've done billboards, all in an effort to get the word out that you can call in, get a telehealth visit. It could be COVID related or not, doesn't really need to be. And we can deliver your pharmacy script to your door because that's very important as we, as a good portion of our patients, particularly with chronic diseases, need medication. If they're not coming out of the house to come to their doctor, then they may not go out of the house to go to the pharmacist. And so we give them the option of having their script delivered to them. And that's going over very nicely. And in fact, our pharmacy business is growing a fuzz as a result of that offer to our patients, that if they, you know, were previously using CVS or Walgreens, they would have to go and pick it up. But if they use our pharmacist, they can have those scripts that can have those scripts delivered. The other piece I wanted to talk about, which is very critical, is as our visits dropped, and as a consequence, the revenues dropped, we also have had quite a bit of revenue coming in out of the CARES Act, either through the federal government through HRSA. We received the PPP grant/loan. For us, it's going to be a complete a loan of about $6 million. Our bank is Santander, and they were very helpful guiding us through the process and ensuring that we acted very early so we could get the funds as quick as possible. We've also received multiple fundings and grants through HRSA, an all total about $4 million that we received from the federal government. And we've also received about $600,000 from the state. And we received a grant from the FCC for $700,000 for the purchase of equipment, software, and alike, all around generating more telehealth visits and, you know, anything related to peripherals around treating patients without them having to come in. And so anyway, the revenues that we've been receiving, although we haven't tapped into, I think, really any of them as of yet, they really have come in handy, really tied into the fact that you know, we essentially have more than offset the revenue that we've lost associated with our visits being dropped. But we're not calling victory just yet because we still have the cold and flu season to get into come September, October, and that'll span all the way into late February. And the challenge, the question is, will COVID, you know, come back? And you've been hearing this sort of second wave, at least in the Philadelphia region, will it come back? And we're hopeful that it won't, but we're certainly better situated today than what we were before. We've, like everyone else, have had our challenges with getting PPE. One of the challenges beyond folks having COVID is, even if patients came in, we had to give every patient a mask. We had to do a screening at the front desk. All of our staff, not just our doctors, had to wear masks. And so our need for PPE, it grew exponentially. And of course, as you all have heard, there were shortages with our major suppliers, the Grangers and the McKessons of the world. They apologize over and over again and just says, hey, we just don't have enough to give you. Things have loosened up a bit in the last several weeks, month rather, and we're in a process of attempting to build up a stockpile, to build up an inventory. This sort of just-in-time inventory that makes sense and saves money, we've sort of skewed away from because we're concerned that there may indeed be another shortage should there be an uptick, particularly in the Northeast, as we get into the cold and flu season, the demand for PPE grows. And so we're in the process now of building up a stockpile so we don't have any interruptions with the face-to-face visits that we have to do. All of our administrative staff, or practically all of them, about 100 folks, are working from home. In fact, I'm at my house today. A good portion of our doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists are also working from home. Most of our docs have a day or two where they come in and do face-to-face visits because not everything in the healthcare business could be done over the phone. But the intent is to keep our staff safe, but also to keep our patients safe. So if we don't have to have a face-to-face visit, then that visit is a telehealth visit. It's all, you know, handled through putting our computers, registered, we bill, we get paid. The benefit is we don't have to have someone in the building. And all the protocols and safety and screenings and masking that go along with that don't have to occur. and we are very intentional about how many patients we schedule to come in the building each day in an effort to keep social distancing in place, keep patients from having to wait too long, and also to keep our PPE needs reduced because for telehealth, obviously, we don't need PPE. With that, I'll stop and open it up for questions. Are there any questions related to COVID and its impacts on us?
This is Steven Levy. Of course, thank you for the call and for explaining what's been going on. So I might have missed it. So how much did you get from CARES specifically?
We received, I'm looking at it right now, about $11 million from CARES. So that is a combination of PPP, excuse me, through the small business, and what we received from HRSA and grant funding, which came out of CARES, but it comes through HRSA, and what we received from the FCC, as well as from the state. So it flows from CARES to those entities, to us.
Got it. So that's all in, if you will.
Correct. That's all in. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So along those lines, when do you expect your June 30th numbers to be posted to Emma, just so we can kind of take a look to see where you're at?
June 30th. Let me see. That's the June's numbers are done. We can have those posted in short order. Let's just say within a week.
Okay, great. Were you all able to take advantage? I mean, my recollection is you don't have a lot of Medicare, but were you able to take advantage of any Medicare advance payments to boost your liquidity?
We did. We did receive some Medicare advance payments to the tune of a couple of $100,000. We got
Not a lot.
And the flip side of that, Stephen, is you have to pay those back. Those are nice, but if I got to pay them back, it doesn't really help in that respect. Because fortunately, we had the CARES Act money, so from a liquidity standpoint, we've been fine.
Okay. So and then lastly, related to this, and then anybody else can ask some questions. So based on this, in terms of your expectations for the end of the fiscal year, are they different now, or are you still kind of keeping with your original budget that you laid out earlier?
I think the original budget will be intact. In fact, we'll actually have more dollars because of the CARES Act money. Our visits will drop a fuzz. For sure, because of the impact of COVID. But from a revenue standpoint and what we've done with expenses, I think we'll actually be better off bottom line than what our budget called for.
Okay.
And again, I want to preface that by saying, Stephen, that assumes that where we are today in terms of visits stays consistent.
Yes. Assuming we don't have a second wave in the next quarter and all that.
Correct.
So I guess I can wait till June, but I know at the end of the fiscal year, your cash was really depressed due to a really high receivable, from my recollection, that may have, I think, led to a covenant violation for 2019. Has cash rebounded since then, or is cash continues to be depressed?
No, cash has rebounded significantly since then. So I'm glad you brought that up, and I'll jump right to that. So in 2019, we had a technical default on the cash covenant. It was driven solely by the fact that our wraparound payments that we received from the state, which roughly about $1.2, $1.3 million per quarter, we were delayed for 9 months. And it wasn't just our organization. It was every FQHC across the Commonwealth. The state changed the way it did its calculation, the methodology with the calculation. There was a timing issue that needed to be dealt with. And to deal with it, they delayed payment, which is why you saw our receivables go up and our cash go down. We, as of January, we started to, now we're back on our normal 4-month schedule. So we're back on schedule. Fortunately for us, around middle of June, middle of the year, because we had anticipated that we were going to have a cash flow problem as a result of what the state changed, we hired a consultant, BKD, to come in and to evaluate the business and really to focus and hone in on our PPS rate. As a result of their work, our PPS reimbursement rate went from $156 to $206. So we have a $50 increase on $150. On our Medicaid reimbursement, which is roughly about 70-75% of our visits. That resulted in a retro payment that all of the managed care companies had to pay us going back to 2018, and we received that money, as well as of January, all our payments that are Medicaid get an extra $50 of reimbursement. And so our cash position has changed dramatically, even outside of the CARES money.
We
see that in our June.
It would be helpful to
see in previous financials.
Yeah, it will be helpful to see the new numbers, and hopefully that will show stability from where you were before kind of the delayed payments.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
and then my last
cash position. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then my last question has to do with 340B. So can you talk about how much you yield from that? My understanding is it looks like the feds are trying to make some changes to 340B going forward, which could impact you all. Maybe you could talk a little bit about kind of how much 340B means to you all financially and then your expectations of what you think may happen.
Sure. So 340B is significant for us as an organization for a couple of reasons. On the front side, on the very obvious side, it allows us to purchase drugs at below wholesale value and then bill them at market rate. And so we generate a profit associated with doing so. The other benefit that what may not be so obvious is that when we see our patients, when they come in, traditionally you would say, okay, here's a script and go pick your script up. Well, if they have to go to another pharmacist, if they have to travel someplace, if they have to get the script up the next day or 2 days later, in a lot of instances, they forget. In a lot of instances, a good portion of Americans never actually pick the scripts up that the doctor tells them to pick up. Because we're able to deliver their script to them before they leave the building, or in today's environment, we can have it mailed to their home, it takes the challenge of them actually going to pick up the script. And so the outcomes of the patients are better as a result of us giving them the script in hand. We benefit from those outcomes when it comes to value-based compensation or pay-for-performance. Those dollars that we get on the revenue side, there are also some dollars we get on the outcome side from the health plans because our patients are taking their medication. Their blood pressures, as an example, are coming down. Their diabetic numbers are improving as a result of actually taking the medication. So it is a win-win-win all the way around for that. We don't foresee any material changes to our pharmacy business as a result of what the feds, some of the conversation at least, what's going on around feds. There is an effort afoot to change 340B, but it's targeted specifically at hospitals and at pharmacies like Walgreens and CVS who walk away with dollars and those folks really weren't really the intended recipients in the spirit of the legislation that came out around 340B. The way that FQHCs operated, the feds are pleased with the way we operated. We take care of the underserved, and the profits we make, we turn that into uncompensated care because we waive copays and prescription costs and translation costs and all the things we do. So we're pretty confident. We, as a community of health centers, are pretty confident that that the changes related to 340B will be targeted at those that really weren't, really, I think, are taking advantage of the program.
Great. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. That's all I had at this point, but I may follow up with you post seeing the due numbers, but at this point, I'll see the floor.
Okay, perfect. Any other questions?
Hey, Brian, Prakash here. Look,
hey, Prakash.
I think did. Hey, man, how are you?
I hope you're well.
Thanks for the update on the COVID stuff. And Steve, I think covered good ground with most of the questions. Just follow up on the line of credit. I think you had about $500,000 drawn. Now, when the cash came in, have you paid the line of credit off?
Yes, the line of credit is completely paid down.
Okay, perfect. And the Medicaid wraparound, when did that come in? The
Medicaid wraparound.
Sorry,
the receivable that we're so the Medicaid wraparound was delayed. It's now being paid on a quarterly basis, so there is no make up for what the state delayed. It's just we're back on the quarterly cycle.
Okay.
What we did receive, the retro payment we did receive from the health plans was as a result of the consultant's work, BKD, and getting us the increase in reimbursement. Those monies started to come in around February, and they sort of trickled in between February and today. We've got roughly about $4 million from the health plans for retro payments dating back to October of 2018.
Got it. I think there was a question on the budget and if you have made any changes to the budget. I just want to kind of, you know, make sure that I understand this right. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have not changed the budget, but is there a forecast that reflects the current situation and how your revenues and cost base has been impacted?
It is. And so it's sort of a convergence of two multiple things. Our visits went down, and now they've come back up. So that's a very easy math to adjust for. But at the same time, our expenses have gone down because we furloughed some staff. And we also have had a revenue boost as a result of the CARES Act dollars. So I think given what your question and Steve's question is, I think what I'll do is quantify that so you can see the ebb and flow around the increased revenue, the reduction in expenses, and the reduction in visits and what that's done for revenue, so you can see the net benefit to the company.
Got it. And my last question is on the 340B. So whatever you just said, right, in response to Steve's question, is that written somewhere or is that your belief? That FQHCs will be okay.
Well, no, it's not written anywhere because there hasn't as of yet been any change in legislation. So I took Steve's questions to mean that he's hearing, because as I hear that changes and the administration is looking to make changes with 340B. So this is all sort of talk that's in the ether. As it stands now, Prakash, there's been nothing changed relative to the way we run our 340B program. And the benefits associated with it. Right now, it's all talk around what could occur, who's the intended target, and our National Association of Health Centers, gives us feedback, and they are advocating and educating and just ensuring that FQHCs are not the baby that's being thrown out with the bathwater when we start talking about changes related to 340B. And the targets are folks that the administration and a lot of people feel that basically have taken advantage of the spirit of the program. They aren't technically breaking any laws, but it being 340B was not intended for major hospital systems to make to make billions of dollars, or for Walmart or Walgreens to make billions of dollars. And so we believe that that is the intended target of any change that's coming down the pipe. And that's if anything changes, because it stands now, from what I'm hearing from folks and elected officials, there really isn't an appetite to give the pharmaceutical companies more money, because removing 340B actually gives the pharmaceutical companies more money. This program doesn't cost the feds anything. It is the feds legislating a requirement of a price purchase from 340B entities. It doesn't actually cost the feds anything. So if the feds say 340B goes away, the beneficiary of it is the manufacturers, and there is no appetite to give the manufacturers of pharmaceuticals more money.
Understood. Got it. That's it from my side, Brian. As always, thanks so much for all the detailed responses. Absolutely.
Perfect. Any other questions? Okay. Great. So then, I'm sorry. Any other questions? Oh, I thought I had a line. Somebody's line. Unmute. Great. Then what I'd like to do with the last couple of minutes is just transition to the unaudited financials. Steve brought up the technical default around cash, which since has been, resolved. The challenge, or what created it, was a delay in our RAP payments. Nothing changed with our business. Our visits didn't drop. Our expenses didn't go up, you know, overnight exponentially. It really was a delay in cash coming in. Our receivables, as you can see on our financials, ballooned as a result of it. And we've since filled that gap. We have cash in hand today of about $10 million. And we have that's a combination of, you know, the retro money we received plus the PPP. And we also have the additional grant dollars that have come in through the CARES Act that's undrawn, to the tune of about $10 million that we haven't actually spent as of yet. And so we're at a very good position relative to cash, probably the best we've ever been in, as a result of what the work that BKD did, the consultant, as well as the dollars we received from the CARES Act and the retro money for our increase in our wraparound payment. But what I would like to do is to touch on two pages from our financials. Obviously, you guys have had these for a couple of weeks now and have looked them over. But just to give a very quick overview and to open it up for any questions. So on page 4 of the financials, which is the year end statement for 2019, you could see that our total revenue and support was $67,036,665. Again, just another milestone in terms of revenue. Conversely, our revenue the prior year, so at the close of 2018, was $62 million. So revenues have grown rather nicely in 2019, which is tied to visits and also the increase in the RAP payment that we received, as well as an increase in pharmacy. Our pharmacy business continues to grow year over year, and up about $800,000 from 18 to 19, tied directly to more scripts. And also we target what I'll call quality scripts or high revenue generating scripts as a way to boost revenue. Additionally, and you can see on our 2019 financials, there is about $1.3 million, close to $1.4 million, of the revenue that's booked in 19 that was actually from 2018. And that's all tied to the BKD's work in getting us the increase in our PPS rate. And so our revenues have grown rather nicely. The expenses were $64,615,000 compared to expenses in the prior year of $61,300,000. So expenses are up a couple million dollars. And again, that's, you know, as we do more visits, we need more staff. We do more pharmacy visits. We need more pharmacy staff, as well as, you know, pharmacy inventory. But the trade-off has worked rather nicely. The business continues to grow. We have, you know, on the behavioral side, the dental and the medical, you know, our business really grows in, I say, two different ways. Traditionally, with more patients, most of our patients come within about a 3 to 5 mile radius, but we're always pushing the envelope to grow the number of patients. But also what we do is we try to grow the number of services we provide to a patient. And the way we've grown our dental business, as an example, is getting medical patients to receive dental services. So it doesn't require that we find or acquire additional patients. It really is the same patient who comes in for medical care. We make a referral, or in some instances, we market directly to the patient to say, we have dental. You need dental. It's convenient. It's all under one EHR. You can get both visits on the same day. You know, please call this number. And so we've done a fairly good job over the years of making that happen. And that's a growing business for us, growing business in that taking existing patients that receive a service from us and getting them connected with other services. The 2019's net assets is $11,800,000 compared to that of $11,577,000 from the prior year. So the bottom line is slightly better than what it was in the previous year. The fundamentals of our business are still strong. We don't, you know, COVID aside for a second, and I think that'll be sort of we'll be able to put a circle around this year and sort of isolate it. But the fundamentals of our business are really unchanged. We have our locations. We're in densely populated areas. The health outcomes and of our patients or of the community are still not great, and our services are sorely, sorely needed. Even in a city that has as many great hospitals as we have, we still find our patients underserved and still find our purpose in being a safety net provider and being there for the community. So are there any questions on the financials? I know we've talked a bit about the technical default, but are there any questions on the unaudited statements from 19?
No, none for me.
Okay, thank you. Okay, great. Well, with that, if there are no questions, I'll conclude the call. We will post the June statements, and I also will include a forecast adjustment, if you will, around
great.
The impacts of COVID, positive and negative, so you guys can see the net.
Right.
And you know that may be a bit of a moving target as we get into the fall, but at least it'll give you a sense for where we stand today.
So I appreciate that, Brian. So one other question. So as I'm reviewing the notes of today's call, it's a little surprising. I don't have much exposure to your sector per se, but it's interesting that the telehealth, I always thought really the telehealth and the hospitals that I deal with, pretty much it's all with a video, with a computer kind of thing. And I'm just wondering if you've gotten pushback either from the state or other payers to do telehealth just with the phone. Has that been problematic, and do you see that maybe not happening going forward? Or is there a risk that ultimately a payers won't pay for that kind of service?
Sure, that's a great question, Steve, because I'm, you know, when they first gave us the permission to do telehealth with just telephones, it was out of the premise that, hey, listen, this is a pandemic. And if you require folks to have a video for multiple reasons, a lot of visits just won't occur because folks don't have video, providers don't have video, and the patients are sheltered in place. So the CMS at the federal level said okay, and then the state separately had to say okay. And I was on maybe a half dozen phone calls to get this pushed over the finish line. That was late March, early April. Since that time mm-hmm. frame, we talk about this on a monthly basis. In fact, I was just on a call today with one of the deputy secretary of health for Pennsylvania, and this exact issue came up on the behavioral health side and on the medical side. Where the state currently is given where we are with COVID and given the challenges around the fall, they are going to they're fine with telephonic only through the close of October, and they will review once again to see where we stand. Now, what we've done as an organization is we're probably, I would say, 2 weeks away from selecting a telehealth video conferencing software in anticipation that the telehealth or the telephonic only function will be removed or altered in some way. And so we plan to have by the end of the summer all of our providers trained, software implemented, and actually being used video conferencing, because we anticipate that this is not going to win a special time and this honeymoon will be over at some point. So once it long before it changes, we'll have the video conferencing in place. We'll be using it. And when they announce the change, say hypothetically they come out in October and they say by December 1, you have to use video, we'll be months in advance of that decision, in anticipation of that change. But I appreciate that question, because that was something that I've been, you know, planning for the inevitability of the state saying, no, you need to have the video. There is an effort afoot, I must say. There are folks in the medical community that are challenging the video, the benefit of the video, not the technology, but why? What is it doing? Why is that needed? The provider is talking to the patient. Everything is charted and noted and coded. The video is, you know, for show. It's what some would argue. There is no separate benefit, no clinical benefit, let's put it that way, no clinical benefit for the video. And so there is an effort afoot to abandon, but that's at the federal, that has to be made at the federal level, because that's a CMS, the video is a CMS requirement. We're planning for video, so we're pretty close. You may have heard some of these companies. We're looking at Doximity and DoxyMe are the two front runners that we're looking at and integrating into our software. And I believe we're going to go with Doximity. So within the next couple of weeks, we would have decided, and we'll have video in anticipation of this reprieve being removed.
Okay, great. That's really helpful. I mean, just from our perch, we see the ship has sailed and telehealth is a thing and will be continue to be a thing. The whole notion of just phone call, I think, may be a little bit tougher sell. But I think in terms of the video, I think everybody's preparing for that going forward, even post-COVID.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Stephen. I think it's here to stay. I envision at any given day, I'm going to say even after COVID, half my visits will be telehealth. I envision yep. being able to recruit providers from other states, get them credentialed in PA, where they don't actually have to live here to work here because of the telehealth function. And I envision being able to grow my business beyond the 3 to 5 mile radius of my health centers, because you don't have to physically walk in. And so I see the landscape changing, and we already have plans to put in our strategic plan in an effort to, you know, be a bit ahead of the curve and anticipating what's going to come down the pike. But absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And we will, I guess the next call would be post 2020 audit, which we can discuss that, I guess, at some point.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thank you so much for everybody for being on the call.
Absolutely. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments?
Well, that's it. Thanks, Brian.
Great.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You, Josh. You guys take care. This concludes the COVID-19 update as well as the review of the audited financial statements for 2019. Thank you.